wishes best picking on that red guitar. So get around. Now get around, chill and be down. Or just get down, chill and get loud. Well, you can be loud, yeah, and be proud. And you can be proud, yeah, and I'll be proud. You will, because Sal's gonna do it again and again.
Welcome back to the Jeff Porch Show at FM Talk 106.5, 34 minutes after the hour on this Friday morning. We do appreciate you listening as always. 251-343-0106. Hit us up on that text line. Whatever you want to respond to something I say that you disagree with, you just want to comment on me in particular, negatively or positively, or send something completely unrelated to any of that. Send it my way. And like I said, always appreciate the feedback. Joining us now on the line from up in Muscle Shoals, and I'm glad we could get this gentleman on this morning, State Representative Andrew Sorrell, also a candidate for state auditor. What a representative, how are you?
Jeff, I'm doing really well. Sure to appreciate you getting me on.
Hey, thanks for making time for us. A lot going on. I guess before we get into the more serious stuff, tell us how the campaign's going for auditor.
I feel like we have so much momentum going in our campaign. You know, I was able to speak at the Trump rally in Cullman back on August 21st. 40,000 people were at that rally, heard me speak. I walked into a restaurant actually in Mobile a couple weeks ago, and a guy said, "You're Andrew Sorrell." I said, "If we met," he said, "No, I heard you speak at the Trump rally." So I think I got some good name ID and exposure from that. Also, I know my campaign is just really, really strong right now. I think we've handed out about 40,000 palm cards already in 3 months. So we're definitely doing our part to get out there and just pound the pavement. And the fundraising has been really, really good. My colleagues in the state legislature are kind of scratching their heads and saying, how are you even raising this much money for state auditor? But I think it just evidences that people do care about the state auditor's position. They're very, very excited about the number one most conservative voting record that I have in the state legislature the last few years. And they're excited to support my campaign. I think we had something like 115 individual donors give money to the campaign last month. And just really, really proud of the fundraising efforts as well.
And now, Representative, a tragedy, your neck of the woods Friday night. This obviously has political consequences, I'm afraid. But Officer Sheffield killed a lot of duty in Muscle Shoals. And turned out the suspect, out on parole, go figure, didn't really have a very stellar record while he was incarcerated. But it came just hours after you guys in the legislature voted in a prison plan. You obviously voted against it. But some of this criminal justice reform stuff, are we jumping the gun on it? Where are you on that these days?
Actually, I don't think that what happened is it really was a tragedy. I'm going to his funeral, by the way, a little bit later today, Sergeant Nick Reisner. And I mean, it's just the outpouring of support in our community for this guy has been just overwhelming. I watched the procession go by bringing his body back from Huntsville the other day. It was 102 police cars, and just, I got emotional just watching it. But I don't believe that the bills that we passed in Montgomery last week really had anything to do with his particular situation. The failure on his situation was our district attorney only secured a 10-year conviction. The guy murdered his father and only got sentenced to 10 years. And it was a manslaughter charge, Jeff, which just really makes me furious because manslaughter is considered a nonviolent offense, which means you're eligible for getting out early. You're eligible for working your time off for good behavior. So the guy gets out after 3.5 years on a 10-year sentence. We need a truth in sentencing bill because people hear 10-year sentence and they think he's going to be in for 10 years. No, never the case. They're in for 3 years, 5 years. They always get out really, really early. So don't believe it when you hear somebody say a 10-year sentence. But nonetheless, he didn't even have good behavior. So this was another major, major failure, I think, on the part of the Pardons and Parole Board, because this fellow was released after getting caught with drugs twice, after getting in a fight with another inmate. This does not sound like somebody who should be eligible for good behavior. So this fellow gets out. He gets released in 2016. Then he ends up killing a friend of his, stealing the guy's gun and killing him, and then running from the police, and then ended up shooting a couple police officers, one of whom died. So really, really a tragedy. But I don't think that the bills that we passed had really any impact on this situation at all.
Well, it's not so much the bills. I don't think they had any impact whatsoever. I think it's the perception that we're putting such an emphasis on something that, you know, Republicans typically it's not at the top of their list. You have a super Republican supermajority that sometimes doesn't act like it in the Alabama legislature, but that it's a priority ahead of anything else, and that this last special session wasn't even the appropriate venue to have these discussions about these, you know, the relatively minor changes in sentencing and you know, the way the release process functions. But I think the optics of it have a lot of people scratching their heads.
It is. It's the optics. The optics are the problem here. And one of the bills that was passed allowed for an early supervised release with electronic monitoring, with ankle bracelets. And what we were told, the statistics are very, very good on this. They say if someone's serving a 20-year sentence and you let them out after 20 years, cold turkey, they're reintroduced in society. We have zero oversight on them. And almost all of them end up back in jail. They end up recommitting some other crime or the same crime again. If you release them a few months early and put them on an ankle bracelet and tell them where they can go, where they can't go out of state, they can't be anywhere near the victim, blah, 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 you can monitor them, 40% less likely to end up back in jail. So they made a very, very good argument for that. I don't think that is our problem. I think the problem is that when people commit murder in Alabama, they should get more than a 10-year sentence. And when people commit murder in Alabama, they certainly shouldn't get out 6.5 years early.
All right. Well, beyond the criminal justice aspects of last week's special session, you opposed that prison plan. Obviously, it's sailed through the legislature. It's now law. But I guess on various grounds, you probably opposed what they had offered. Walk us through your no vote.
Yeah, actually, I'm going to rephrase what you said a little bit. I wasn't opposed to the prison plan. I was opposed to the prison debt. The prison plan I thought was okay, and we definitely need new prisons in Alabama. Our prisons are atrocious, and the federal government said if we don't build new prisons, that they're going to come in and start releasing people. And then all those people that we're talking about right now, all those murderers and whatnot, are going to be released back into society if we don't fix this problem. 81%, according to Steve Marshall, 81% of the people in Alabama prison are violent offenders. We do not need to let anybody else out of jail. We've already let everyone out of jail that we should possibly let out of jail. But the prison plan itself, I wasn't opposed to. We do need to build new prisons, but we need to pay cash for the new prisons because I'm tired of saddling my children and grandchildren with debt. Now, I say my children. My first child is arriving. The due date is 3 days from now. But when that baby is born, why is that baby coming into the world with a whole bunch of debt in Alabama? Doesn't make any sense. We found a way to pay cash for the first prison. We used some corona money. We took a supplemental appropriation out of the general fund. And we paid cash for the first prison. I voted for those. I voted for both of those bills. I thought those were good bills. I voted against the bill that included the $785 million bond issue because every year in the legislature, we have bigger and bigger budgets. But every year in the legislature, we borrow money. And it just rubs me the wrong way, Jeff. So that's why I voted no.
Well, let me ask you that, the use of COVID money, ARPA funds. Now, I know there were not that many conditions on this money here, but how did you feel about taking federal money earmarked for whatever the legislature and I guess the state government saw fit and applying that toward a prison plan?
So I've always said that I would have preferred that corona relief money go to individuals and small businesses impacted by the coronavirus shutdown. And, you know, ironically, I'm not saying impacted by the coronavirus. I'm saying by the shutdown. But we're the ones who destroyed people's ability to work and small businesses' ability to open and have revenue. I mean, we literally told people they could not open their small business while we let big business rake in record-breaking profits last year. It's a real, real tragedy. So my preference is that the corona relief money would go to individuals and businesses affected by the shutdown. That's not really what happened. And the corona money that we appropriated last year, I read somewhere that over 60% of it went to state and local governments. The governments aren't who needed relief. It was individuals and small businesses, in my opinion. Now, this money was different. This money was revenue reimbursement for lost taxes. It was unrestricted money. There was no prohibition on us using this to spend on prisons. So I didn't have a problem with it. I voted for that. I think I would rather vote to use corona money to pay cash for the prison than to saddle the Alabama voting public with additional debt.
Joined by State Representative Andrew Sorrell, also candidate for state auditor here in Alabama. Let's move on. Reapportionment coming up. I'm certain you're keeping an eye on that, especially the way these new lines are going to be drawn. Never a a controversy-free process, but how do you feel about, I guess, I assume you're involved somewhat, at least in the on the House side of reapportionment. What are you hearing? What do you think? How do you think it's going?
There's a couple big things impacting the Shoals that have me very concerned. One of them is the congressional line redraw. I haven't seen the maps myself. I've just talked to other people who have seen them, so this is secondhand information. But what I'm hearing is that they've split Lauderdale County in half. Some of it goes to the 4th District. Some of it goes to the 5th District. I would like to see the Shoals back together. I think Colbert and Lauderdale County, we're only separated by a river. We've always been the Shoals. We're kind of a close-knit community. I would like to see them in the same congressional district, personally.
Well, let me ask you about that, because people may not be, and our listening audience may not be familiar with this, but on the north side of Tennessee River in the Shoals, that is Congressman Mo Brooks' district. On the south side, that is Congressman Robert Adderholt's district. Now, a lot of people think this, that you have two members of Congress that you're getting two votes working for you, but you don't think that is necessarily a positive?
No, I don't. And let me tell you what, let me break it down to the state level and I'll explain why I don't think it works that way. So I am obviously state representative, House District 3. I represent three counties. 80% of my voters are in Colbert County, which is where I live. I have a tiny percentage, maybe 3 or 4% of my district's in Lauderdale. And then the other 15, 16, 17% is over in Lawrence County. And what happens is your legislators' attention gets split between more counties and you're less effective. So I have 10 municipalities. I have 6 school boards in my district. I have 3 county commissions that I deal with. And don't get me wrong, I'm not complaining. I'm happy to do it all. I'm happy to represent. I knew who the district was when I ran for it. But just from a time management standpoint, if I only represented 2 counties instead of 3, I could devote more time to those 2 counties. So having multiple people in your county, I don't think it's a good thing. And right now, one of the concerns I have is the proposed redistricting maps take Colbert County from 2 state representatives to 3 state county representatives. And nobody wants to be carved up like that. You don't feel like your county really has a representative. It's like the city of Florence is represented by 4 different people, including me. None of us live in the city of Florence. The city of Florence feels like they don't have, in some sense, a state representative. So, yeah, I think that's the way that I would look at it. I think the fewer the better.
Well, and it's very interesting. But that's always been a tough place for it's always been a difficult place for when we draw these maps. And I don't know that, you know, tell me what you think of this, because this is something we talk about Mobile all the time, kind of out of sight, out of mind. The Shell suffers from that in a similar way, right? That it's in a corner of the state. It's probably as far from Montgomery as anybody else is. And oftentimes you find yourself, or that area finds itself, kind of on the short end of the stick.
No, you nailed it. You hit the nail exactly on the head. I live 200.0 miles from the state capitol. From my driveway to state capitol is 200 miles. And you do get the sense that you're forgotten about in Montgomery. You're over on a corner of a state. You're not a major city. And you just kind of feel left out and forgotten about sometimes. So I know exactly how that feels. And, you know, we joke with Representative Philip Pettis. He's in House District 1. He lives up at Green Hill on the Tennessee state line. We joke that he's the highest paid legislator. And the reason is because he gets the most mileage reimbursement, you know, as he goes back and forth to Montgomery. But for some people, where they're able to get in a car and drive 45 minutes and be at the state house, we don't do that. Like when I go to Montgomery, it's a major undertaking. It's like, okay, let's get packed up for the week. You know, when we were down there for special session, I didn't even know how many days we were going to be there for. So I had to just pack extra clothes because you just don't know. So it's very different for those of us who live, I'd say, more than 2 hours from Montgomery. It's a very different experience for those who are closer.
Representative, just a few more minutes here, but before we let you go, do you anticipate, you know, aside from this reapportionment special session before we head into January of next year, do you anticipate the legislature looking at anything else in the interim?
I do, actually, yes. I think that next special session, it is somewhat possible. I would say somewhat. I'm going to give it 50-50 odds that there are other bills included in the call of the special beyond the redistricting. And I think if you see anything at all, what you'll see is medical freedom bills. And that's exactly what we need to be considering. So if we're already going to be in special session in Montgomery, it would not cost the taxpayers an extra penny for the legislature to consider some other bills. I think we deserve to. I mean, I think the Alabama citizens deserve that of their legislature, that we have not done very much at all to protect individual freedom and liberty when it comes to medical rights in this state. The only good thing we've done that I've seen is Senate Bill 267 last year. Well, I say last year, last session, we passed it in May of this year. And it protected employees from, customers from discrimination based on vaccination status. What it did not do was protect employees from discrimination based on vaccination status. We need to see that bill. We need to see my anti-mask mandate bill for schools. Parents should be deciding whether or not their child wears a mask in school, not governmental entities. We don't need the government to start making health choices for you. And the third bill we need to see in special session is a nullification bill saying we are basically going to ignore Joe Biden's unconstitutional federal overreach. And we're going to do more than just ignore it. We're going to actually obstruct. If they try to enforce in Alabama, we will actually use our resources to obstruct them. That's how far we need to go with fighting back against Joe Biden and the federal government. So of those three bills, will we see some of them in special session? I tend to think that we will. It would not surprise me at all because there's so much public pressure right now. There's a lot of pressure in the Alabama Republican Party. I can feel it building and it's about to boil over. We don't need to wait till January to deal with these issues. We need to deal with them now.
Well, you say that we need to use our resources to obstruct the enforcement of these. Now, it's a regulation, not necessarily something passed by Congress into law. But when you say that, can you walk us through exactly how far that goes and what that means?
Yeah, we need to make it illegal under Alabama law for a federal officer to come in and try to give someone a vaccine that they do not want. So if they come into our state trying to do that, they're actually going to be guilty of a crime under Alabama law. I think that's how far we need to take this nullification. And some people would say that's extreme. That's not extreme, Jeff. What's extreme is Joe Biden signing an executive order telling 100 million people they have to get a vaccination. That is a personal choice you make with your doctor. I am not an anti-vaccine person. However, I am an anti-vaccine mandate person. I believe that people should make that choice for themselves. So yeah, that's what I say when I mean that's what I mean when I say we need to obstruct the federal government. We need to make it a crime under Alabama law if they come into our state and try to force a vaccination to people that don't want it.
Andrew, we're up against a break here, but folks want to check out your campaign, find more out about your run for state auditor. Where do they look?
Two good ways. Andrew Sorrell for state auditor on Facebook, and they can go to andrewsorrell.com. A lot of times you go to these political websites, there's not a lot of information. It's kind of just the general pro-life, pro-job. Well, we're all pro-life and pro-jobs in the Republican Party. I drill down into issues deeper than that. You can see where I stand on a wide variety of issues, and I encourage your listeners to go check that out.
Andrew, as always, we appreciate your time, and we'll talk again soon, I assume.
Yes, sir. Thank you for having me on.
State Representative Andrew Sorrell, we got to get a break in here. We'll be right back. This is the Jeff Porch Show on FM Talk 106.5.